This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Sharmila Ganesan and together with me are Juliet Jacobs and Lim Suan. As always, we have two stories for you.
So last week, Bangladesh announced that it will lift restrictions on education for refugee children and this will allow schooling for children aged between 11 to 13. So we'll be discussing why education is so integral to for refugee children and what the situation is like here in Malaysia. So the government of Bangladesh is easing bans that have been in place for 3 decades and confirmed last week that they are planning to lift restrictions on education for young Rohingya refugees in the country. So the move will allow schooling for children aged between 11 and 13, and it's one that has been not surprisingly welcomed by many activists and teachers in the country. And so Bangladesh's Foreign Minister AK Abdul Momen said that we don't want a lost generation of Rohingya, we want them to have education. And he also added that the education to be provided to the children will be based on the Myanmar curricula.
And the United Nations also believes that this is a positive step. And it clearly indicates the government's commitment to ensuring access to learning for Rohingya children and adolescents. The move will also help to equip them with the right skills and capacities for their future, as well as their return to Myanmar once the conditions allow it.
And the pilot program will start sometime in April, led by UNICEF and the Bangladesh government. It will initially target about 10,000 Rohingya students in grades 6 to 9, who are currently staying at the refugee camps in Cox's Bazar. So, spokesperson for the Dhaka UNHCR, Mustafa Muhammad Sazat Hussein, he told the Associated Press that they will recruit individuals with the appropriate academic qualifications and experience from both Rohingya and Bangladeshi communities and trained as teachers.
So, Cox's Bazar is, of course, the location of two government-run refugee camps, the Nayapara and the Kutupalong camps. Which is actually the largest. The Kutupalong camp, I think, is the largest in the world. And data from the UN High Commissioner for Refugees shows that as of September 2019, the number of refugees at both camps are just under 915,000 people. And the majority of refugees at these camps are Rohingyas, who are a stateless Muslim minority from the neighbouring country of Myanmar. So the government of Myanmar denies the Rohingya citizenship and as of now refuses to recognise them as a people. Instead, the government views them as illegal immigrants from Bangladesh.
Yeah, and so back in August 2017, there was a deadly crackdown by Myanmar's army and that forced more than 742,000 Rohingya Muslims fleeing across the border to Bangladesh. And the refugees also said that troops were burning villages, they were attacking and killing civilians. And reports from Amnesty International also added that the Myanmar army was also raping and abusing Rohingya women and girls. So the United Nations have described the actions of the Myanmar army as a textbook example of ethnic cleansing. And just last month, we saw the news reports that International Court of Justice, the UN's top court, they ordered the country to take all measures within its power to protect the Rohingyas from genocide and also for the country to regularly report to the tribunal about its progress. But of course, the Myanmar army continues to claim that it was fighting Rohingya militant and denies that they were targeting civilians. The country's leader as well, Aung San Suu Kyi, she has also repeatedly denied allegations of genocide.
So Bangladesh, really is at the forefront of receiving these refugees who are fleeing from Myanmar. But the camps are getting more and more overcrowded and more under-resourced as well. So it's really an environment that is incredibly difficult for anyone, but especially if you think about the fact that there's so many children. And currently a network of 1,600 UNICEF-run small learning centres provides primary education to more than 145,000 children. The Rohingyas have also been filling in the education gap by establishing centres to teach basic skills like English, maths and sciences, despite opposition from the government.
So previously, Bangladesh had trialled limited education for Rohingya children, but a 2002 report by Doctors Without Borders said that it did not cater to children older than 10. And the report also said that Bangladesh's policy was ultimately influenced by its belief that providing school would be a stay factor for refugees and that the government wanted to repatriate to Myanmar. These are the students they wanted to get rid of. So this news from the Bangladeshi government that education will be provided to some children is, very much welcome news, but there are still limitations, of course. So Kin Maung, who is the head of the Rohingya Youth Association, said that he appreciated what the government is doing, but he hopes that they would also consider providing education for youths like him, who had studied to just below university level before they had to leave Myanmar. Mm. So what he said was that, quote unquote, "I want to study law, but I'm losing hope. What's the future for me? We can build ourselves up, but we need permission from the government."
Mm. And it's when I was reading that as well, it's that word permission from the government, right? I think it's something that a lot of us are forgetting, that the refugees are still, you know, trying to live by the rules, by the laws that govern the host country that they are in. You know? But in many cases, they are left with little choice when they're given very limited access to basic needs. And this includes that of education. Mm. And if we look in Malaysia, there's about 178,000 refugees and asylum seekers registered with UNHCR here. And out of these, more than 46,000 children are below the age of 18. So what is being done about their education here? So earlier today, I spoke to Glorine Das, the executive director of Tenaga Nita, for her insights into the importance of education for refugees. And I started off by asking her about the level of education that refugee children receive in Malaysia and where they can access education.
Currently, most refugee children who seek academic opportunities attend learning centres operated by refugee-led community-based organisations and groups, or even CSOs and NGOs. Depending on available resources, levels of education offered range from kindergarten to secondary school and some nursery level as well. You know, there was a survey last year by the Faculty of Medicine, UTM, that out of 78,000 UNHCR registered children, only 30% of them are attending these learning centers. The remaining 70% just don't go to school. This is due to the fact that parents simply don't have a livelihood and an income to send the children to learning centers. A majority of these learning centers very often lack funding and resources to provide academic opportunities. And some centers mostly consist of volunteers or untrained teachers using a mix of syllabi and are very often unable to register students for exams. Mm-hmm. So without access to trained teachers, uniform accredited syllabi and certified academic examination, much of their time in learning centers are in vain. The children are not able to sit for big exams such as UPSR, SPM, and STPM. Mm-hmm. And youths who complete their secondary level studies at learning centers who are unable to afford examinations such as International General Certificate of a Secondary Education are unable to obtain any form of certification to bring forward in applying for jobs or tertiary academic opportunities. So in a nutshell, tertiary education is not an option for them. Mm-hmm. However, on a positive note, there are some skill training programs provided by private universities for about 500 refugee youths. In fact, they have graduated from this program since 2011. Further to that, UNHCR also has agreements with few colleges and universities locally to access higher education for refugee children. However, from the knowledge that we have, only 40 of them out of the 78,000 registered children are able to attend and pursue this form of education.
Mm-hmm. So now that we hear that Bangladesh is planning to, you know, provide education for at least some of the children, do you think that's something that the Malaysian government can follow in their footsteps? And what are the challenges that we would face if we were to do something like that to provide formal education for refugees in Malaysia?
Well, The Malaysian government had recently allowed refugee communities access to formal education in various occasions. But such a policy would not be completely unknown and new to implement. It has been done before. We have known communities or children from communities who are now currently leaders of communities who have been part of this program.
Mm-hmm.
Advocacy with stakeholders and research carried out by various institutions and groups have shown the clear numbers of the positive contributions of integrating refugee communities into host countries through policies such as those establishing their right to formal education. It is possible to assume the challenge here is a lack of political will to establish such policy stem from the lack of public acceptance of refugees.
Mm-hmm.
Much of the local community seems unaware of the factors which create displacement and the significant population of refugees here. Without understanding the realities and the context, and fear and hate against these communities are stoked. As we have seen all around the world and throughout history, it becomes a common human habit to fear the unknown. I have a quote to share from one of our community leaders from the Rohingya community. She said, "The main challenge to provide formal education is Malaysian social perspective towards refugees,
mm-hmm.
because I think Malaysians don't see the positive side of refugees. They often think refugees are charity cases. UNHCR and NGOs are supporting them in terms of financial means to some extent. So why should we Malaysians care about refugees in Malaysia? In fact, you know, they have their own issues in the country."
Mm-hmm.
"But as a refugee who was born in Malaysia," Hasna says, "I feel we should promote harmony and peace and humanity because refugee children are children after all. They deserve the same dignity as Malaysian children. If the society believe in them, allow them to and give them proper education, it will come back to benefit Malaysia."
Mm-hmm. And, you know, from what I was reading as well, in Bangladesh, they plan to provide education based on the Myanmar curriculum. Do you think that that's actually, it's more beneficial for the children to learn the curriculum of their home country or to be, you know, sort of brought into formal education of the host country?
Well, Bangladesh is actually looking into the fact they've already have this perspective that they will be repatriated. They will be sent back to the country of origin upon Myanmar accepting the Rohingya community as their own. I think the idea of running the formal education according to the Myanmar curriculum comes from there. But in Malaysia, we have to look at it differently because this is a country of transit. They are waiting to be resettled. But meanwhile, we're talking about a group of children from the age of 5 to 15, or rather those who have been here from 15 years, from the time that they were born. I think we need to integrate them into the community of Malaysia or the society of Malaysia. And to be able to do that, we need to provide a curriculum based on the Malaysian syllabi.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the short term, what sort of changes, what sort of actions do you think the public can do to sort of help, you know, refugee children in Malaysia to access education, to receive the education that they really need?
I think let's go back to the lack of recognition. I think first and foremost, we need to talk about the lack of recognition before we could even think about providing the basic necessities, and that would be one of the most important thing would be access to education. With a lack of legal recognition of refugees in Malaysia, essentially the government, you know, trivializes their existence as individuals in need of refuge. Without this legitimate acknowledgement of their refugee status and claims, our policies are unable to address their needs comprehensively or effectively, rather efficiently. Refugees and asylum seekers, as you may already know, and we know it as civil society organizations and NGOs, are unlike to local and migrant communities. And in the first instance, requires recognition by the government in the form of signing onto the 1951 Convention relating to status of refugees. And at the very least, policy which implement fair and inclusive documentation of all refugees and asylum seekers. Because without recognition and acknowledgement of their existence here in Malaysia, there's no way forward. With documentation, we are able to facilitate the access to legal employment, education, or rather formal education to all children, and at the same time, addressing all the other pertinent aspects relating to these communities, such as public health, access to justice, addressing human trafficking concerns, mm-hmm. and security. There needs to be a shift of paradigm here, you know, in terms of the Malaysian citizens' perspective, us as Malaysian. We have to stop thinking of refugees as partners and not as charity cases. Partners in contributing to the development of Malaysia, be it economically and socially, being workers, innovators, entrepreneurs, and even taxpayers. And this is only possible with education. Let's remember that their diverse perspective and framework of thinking, as well as experience that they have had, can help spark new ideas. People who have been uprooted from one culture and exposed to another tend to be more creative.
So that was Glorine Das, who's the executive director of Tenaga Nita, weighing in on how Bangladesh has now said that they are going to introduce education for children aged between 11 and 13.
Mm. Well done, Bangladesh. I think Bangladesh has been one of those countries that, you know, unlike many others in this region, including ourselves, I think, that has been putting in place these as much as they can and trying to accept as many refugees as they can, particularly the Rohingyas, and something that's really necessary for this region as well.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also important for us to not to forget, right, for children, some children are being born into these camps and they've known only these camps their entire lives. And for them to not receive the education that they need, these are especially in for their primary education, right? Mm-hmm. This is what they need to develop language, to learn new skills. It's important. And I think like Glorine says as well, if you don't learn these things at a young age, you have knock-on effects that will last long into your adulthood.
The cycle of poverty will continue. I mean, how are you ever going to hope to get yourself out of that situation if you don't have any sort of education at all? I mean, if you can't read, you can't write, what are you supposed to do in this world?
Yeah, and 5-6 years is a long time in the life of a child to go without education. And that's assuming it's only 5-6 years. As we know, we've had Rohingya refugees here for much longer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Juliet, I believe you had an interview that you did with the refugee community on the importance of education.
I did. I spoke to Colin Naltanpuya. He's actually a Chin refugee, an ethnic Chin refugee who's been in Malaysia, but he benefited from an education. I mean, of course, it was not a formal education as such, but, you know, he did receive, thanks to the NGOs that are in Malaysia, he did receive an education. And he said how important it was for him to have that, because that's the only way he could think that he can get out of any sort of cycle of poverty or anything of that sort. And he's afraid, of course, to go back home because he doesn't know what the situation is like. That so it was important that he got an education that was not so much that was a kind of a global education in that sense, you know, so that he could take those skills and use it anywhere. And coincidentally, he was a filmmaker, something that could, you know, he could do anywhere in this world. But he did speak about, you know, how important it was for him and, you know, his fellow Chin refugee community to have that, you know, and how it made them feel like people. Because, you know, none of them want to be here. Yes. They would like to be in their own homes. But, you know, the fact is there's a very real and present danger back home for them, you know, including death, if they were to return home. So it's education, lah.
Yeah, and a lot of NGOs are doing this on their own, without without really the amount of support that they actually need to provide education for all refugee children. They can only help as much funds as they have.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you do have more thoughts on that, or if you'd like to share your opinions, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. We do need to take a quick break, but we will be right back after this. But first, here's The Kids Are All Right by The Who on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.